Hello, everyone, and welcome to GFG tonight. And we are speaking with our friend Ryan Dawson, an update about the Ukraine situation. How are you doing, Ryan?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on again.
So you've seen a couple of things in advance and even made predictions that came to be true in the case of the Ukraine conflict. One of the things we discussed last time was the encirclement strategy in the southeast. And I'm kind of disappointed by the speed of it. It seems to be going relatively slow. Am I just demanding too much from Russia here?
No, well, the speed of it is to save Russian lives. One thing Ukraine did is they went World War One style with trenches. And they had some trench networks already from the 2014 conflict, where they got waxed. These are a bit more advanced. They're zigzagging their trenches. They've got bunkers. And so unless you want to sacrifice a lot of guys, you know, to get into a trench, you got to rain it with artillery and quickly follow up with infantry, and you're going to lose a lot. And Russia's decided why. They're running out of fuel. They're running out of food. The reason Ukraine can't do good counterstrikes is because they're outranged in artillery and they don't have fuel for mobile warfare. And so they're doing the next best thing is what Robert E. Lee used to do, just dig in. You know, you give them a day and they have an impenetrable fortress there. However, Robert E. Lee was not facing Russian artillery. Russia has decided, yeah, it'll take a long time, but we're not going to go in with infantry. We're just going to hit them with artillery all day, every day. And they're using mobile drones to sort of spot where they are. And to counter that, Ukraine has been using mannequins, and not like a mannequin in a store, like really good mannequins with fake weapons and everything. So that a drone will spot that and they'll target that and waste ammo. And those are decoys, even some decoy trenches. They're just little straight lines, you can tell. Another thing Ukraine's done is they've put their trenches near tree lines and other natural obstacles to make it harder to see from the air. Because if you can't target it like that, Russia's not going to waste their best artillery guided and all that on these when they can just scatter it with grads and things like that. Mm-hmm. And so Russia is using 400,000 to 600,000artillery shells a day. To explain how much that is, the U.S. aid to Ukraine, Joe Biden sent them, I believe, 90,000 rounds for the howitzers.
Total.
Yeah, that's less than a morning of what Russia brings down on them. And that's Russian warfare. That's the Russian doctrine, is artillery. You got to get it in place and everything, but once it's set up, as long as you have enough ammo, it's all offense with no loss. And a way to counter artillery, obviously, is to fly over it and bomb it, but they already took out the Ukrainian Air Force. Mm-hmm. So there is no way to reach that artillery. And the M777, the 777s that the U.S. has sent, is, you know, better than what Ukraine currently was using. It had a range of about 18 miles. This will have a range of about 20 miles. It's a 2-mile difference to move the line. There's a couple problems with it, though. One, the Russian artillery range is about 24 miles. So you're still outranged by 4 miles. So you will not move the line, because just go deeper in where Russia is even more accurate. And you can't really move forward when you have to stay in a trench. Like it's a goal, unless you dig tunnel all the way, that's real slow if you want to go forward that way. And what are you going to do when you get there? Then you're going to meet Russian tanks and infantry. Tanks are not going to cross an open field, but if you come to them, well, yeah, they'll blow you away. So it's a very slow trench warfare in certain spots. Now, Ukraine didn't have time to dig in and bunker everywhere, and that's where you're seeing breakthroughs. And Russia has also, if they want to concentrate a force, the way they used to fight Aleppo in urban warfare in Syria, I mean, the Syrians were doing it, but it was Russian generals and Russian plans. They would kind of pancake them out section by section and force them to retreat all in one area. And then they would just level that place. Mm-hmm. That's when they will use their thermobaric bombs. And once they squish them and force them to retreat, and then they think they're safe, and then they just kaboom. But Russia, you've seen them when they need to, and they're willing to sacrifice some manpower. Like, they definitely had to have Mariupol. They took it. They took Kherson because they needed that to secure their flank on that side of the river. They wiped out the Air Force. They hit deep into Ukraine for their supply lines because NATO is making this war cost a lot more and last a lot longer and getting a lot more Ukrainians killed. And they decided to bring in all this gear from Germany, from the US via Poland or Moldova, which is a hot spot. And absolutely, the only way to transport some of this stuff is by freight, truck, or train. So they took out the train and subways, rail systems. Russia's hit deep all the way into Western Ukraine to hit ammo depots and fuel depots. The only stuff they have left is what they had underground. And Russia's even gotten some of that with thermobarics. They've got good intelligence, very good precision strikes. So the other problem with the M777 is it's a tow artillery, which means it's not a lot of artillery. Modern artillery is on a back of trucks. You've seen those trucks with the like the box that opens and shoots all the rockets, or it's on wheels of some sort. These things are way too heavy for that. To get, you know, a range of 20 miles, you have to tow it either with the ton truck, which is not a normal like pickup truck. So it's an army vehicle with like eight tires, you know, or a helicopter, and not any helicopter. It's got to be a transport helicopter, the type that can tow things. Mm-hmm. So it's the one with two blades, you know. That if they do it in the air, bam, the S-400 is going to nail it. So you won't be able to move these things around. Getting them to the front line is going to be a bitch. You can't just hide them in civilian cars the way they were getting ammo and stuff. They're mixing it with civilians and bringing it to the front. And Russia's not going to play the guessing game and accidentally kill civilians. So they can, like, however, spike the roads.
I'd like to talk about three sides of progression. One side is Kharkiv.
Oh, awesome.
The other being Izium. For the encirclement of the southeastern part, and the other being Mariupol. Perhaps let's start with the easiest one, Mariupol. 260 people have left the Azov steel plant, Ukrainian defense officials say, 1 hour ago. So are we done with Mariupol? Is it fully under control of the Russians at this point?
That city's fully under control, and the coastline's fully under control. There's that little Azov steel area where they were dug in. Because the steel factory goes eight stories underground, right? So this was built in the Soviet area. So getting into a place like that, you can blow up the first floor or whatever, but you'd have to go down like you're fighting through catacombs to a very entrenched. This is why they made it their HQ, right? They kept retreating back to this area thinking they're not coming in here. These are Chechens or whatever could go in there, but you lose a lot of guys. And there's no reason, like, what's the hurry? We have to finish this, but they thought we're going to force Russia to hurry into this well-defended war through the sanctions. But the rubles is the best performing currency on earth right now.
And Russia is as rich as it's ever been with the price of gas. They have more money in the bank than at any time in the past.
And guess who's running out of time? NATO. Right. Yeah. Who's got the spike in gas and food shortages? And now we're running out of baby formula, although that's not all just the war in Ukraine. But, you know, they don't have enough wheat. We don't have enough fertilizer. We don't have enough gasoline. It's Europe, especially Italy, especially Germany. It's the whole globe really is getting squeezed by this. Anybody that puts sanctions on Russia is hurting. And also Ukraine. Ukraine physically cannot harvest its wheat and get that out either. And that was, you know, combined close to 30%. You can't just replace that instantly. You would have to plant it last year, you know, so that just isn't going to be there. So Russia is like, yeah, we're not in a rush. We'll just sit back and lob It doesn't cost much to make artillery shells. All their factories, all their infrastructure is in place. Russia hasn't lost any cities or anything. That's why you say, well, they only have a 250,000 person army. I'm like, yeah, but they got millions building gear and pumping out that. That's how the US won World War II, was not superior soldiers or anything. It was they had the most intact cities and the most manufacturing. And yeah, you can blow up however much you want. We'll have another one
So you
tomorrow, you
think
know.
that Russia hasn't come close to exhausting anything on the ammo, tank, or plane side?
Russia's got plenty of fuel. They've got more money than they've ever had. They've got plenty of tanks in reserve. Tank is not really winning this war right now, though. It's, you
Yeah.
gotta have, you can't just have your artillery sitting there, but you have to have some. And they would, it, the, having, just having the tank is why Ukraine has to go into the trench too. Like, but you don't really need them. They're not running out of them. They did lose some armored vehicles and tanks in the very beginning. You have to in the beginning. They had to snatch all the airfields and stuff. It was the key to wipe out everything Ukraine had in the air and water so that they could do what they're doing now with their artillery. So
Now, we've seen
I don't
some
see it.
success in destruction of tanks with sometimes drones and sometimes attacks on convoys. Is it surprising do you think Russia was surprised by the aggression there in terms of the ability of Ukraine, a more technologically advanced than the usual Middle East country, in terms of defending itself?
More technologically advanced than they were in 2014, even. And Russia just kind of rolled over them. You know, they Crimea had a secession movement. It was not annexed, but there was a fight in Donbass, and Russia just like flicked that flea out of the way. Not anymore. I mean, they've had 8 years of NATO training and weaponry, and they didn't get the best in-laws and javelins, but even the worst of one of the best anti-tank things is a good anti-tank weapon. And most of Russia's losses have actually come from artillery too, Ukrainian artillery. Artillery is what's killing the most people on both sides. But then it would be anti-tank weapons. And Ukraine did get some tactical victories where Russia paratrooped in a little bit too ambitiously.
Yeah,
And
that
this
was
is
cowboy
because,
stuff.
yeah, well, I mean, they thought they'd surrender. And but they can't. Like a lot of these neo-Nazis did the Stonewall Jackson thing, not to compare those two because they're not the same at all. But he's like, if you turn around, I'll shoot you myself, you know? So it's like, okay.
They're locked in.
They got they're behind enemy lines and they're like, well, we'll go after you. And yeah, they had a lot more teeth on that dog than they realized, but the fight IQ is much higher on the Russian side. When they did something stupid, they changed and they changed tactics. Ukraine's just got a dogmatic doctrine and they're not flexible. And it's also harder for them because Russia took out their communications too. So it's they can't really do any organized hybrid warfare. And it's hard to do much when you don't have an air force anymore and the other side does. So, I mean, they have a few, but it's like 90% wiped out. And they know they can't be in the air very long. They do some low-level helicopter flights at night or whatever, but yeah, they even had tried attacking Russia a few times across the border.
So how is
And
Russia targeting the air of Ukraine? Is it through these men pads, or that's only on the side of Ukraine?
Ukraine has man pads, and that's scary because those will get out, right? That's something the US would not even give Al Qaeda when they
Yeah.
started losing in Syria because they don't want them showing up in Europe shooting commercial planes with them. Well, these neo-Nazis don't care either. Like you'll see this, like they'll bury them, go back and get them later, or they'll sell them to Al Qaeda or whatever, you know, for a personal pocket. And gosh, you just can't let a weapon like that, Stingers and man pads, just one, you know, just one could take out a plane full of people, some idiot wherever, show up in Paris and boom, you know. But they've put them in there and it's ridiculous because you're not gonna get that close for these. And you wouldn't even have to hit, I mean, you could use them for not even four. If you want to just shoot a bus with it, you could. I mean, it would work, but No, Russia has several systems. So they have the S-400 and S-300. That is a long-range anti-air defense system with very long radar. They know as soon as you leave the runway and it comes from above, straight down on the aircraft. And they
So they have a plane flying above and they drop a bomb onto a lower plane?
No, it's like it's shot from the ground, but it's like it goes up, and then when that radar detects it, it just turns and drops straight on it. Okay. It's pretty awesome stuff. Death from above for real. And it's super long range. And so anything high altitude is gonna get murked by that. It'll get starched. The S-300 is the same thing. It's less range than the 400. It's sort of like the backup behind that. And that'll also take out incoming fire sometimes. So like anything that's going air to ground, well, if you don't get close enough because they've got you outranged and hits you while you're in the air, another thing you're going to fire at the ground is never going to even leave your machine. But then they have the Pansia and the Buk M1 and the Buk M3, which intercept fire and they can shoot down anything in the air. So it's like a layer of redundant, and they'll hit more low altitude things. So if you try to use like glide missiles, like Israel uses Delilahs and things, Israel will use a mixture of different fire, you know, gliding, high altitude, low altitude, the different rates of sonic speed and stuff. They'll just throw all the trash at once to try and confuse all the air systems and get something in to hit Damascus, for example.
Yeah.
But the S-400 forces you to shoot from further away because it'll hit your plane. And so the longer the distance is, the more chances in time you have to intercept, you see.
Okay.
And yeah, and Russia's got all that. And Syria had the S-300. Russia has, which is from Russia. Russia has 400 and 300. And they've got the latest generations of these other anti-air defenses. And then on top of that, they have their air force for air-to-air combat. And they have better... They don't have better fighter jets than the U.S. They have better fighter jets than what Ukraine has, and they have better pilots. And you can't just say, "Here's a jet," right? That was some of the stupid stuff. Like,
unless you're the ghost of Kiev, of course.
Yeah, let's just send them some F-16s and F-15s. They're like, yeah, well, they don't know how to fly those, and they don't have time to learn, right? That's why they had to have MiGs. They had to have what they're trained on, and whatever, they wanted a no-fly zone. Like, well, why don't we just shoot down the Russian planes? But because that's World War III. But they wanted to do that in Syria. Hillary Clinton, when she was Secretary of State, was talking about no-fly zone over Syria, where they're going to shoot down Russian planes. And Turkey actually did shoot down one Russian plane, and paid hell for it economically. Yeah.
Wow.
They got in line.
Know that. As a reminder to our crowd, you can send super chats if you have questions for me or Ryan tonight. Use the Odyssey super chats with the dollar button below the regular chat. There's also a link to Entropy in the description. Go Away has already sent a question. He says, didn't that already happen with MH17? Was that the Ukrainians or the separatists? I can't remember. I don't know what he's referring to. Do you understand this question?
I don't know all the tail numbers of what all. I can tell you what's been shot down. The one I was talking about that Turkey shot down was during the Syrian conflict, not Ukraine. And there was a commercial airliner that somebody shot down around the Donbas region. It looks like Ukraine did it and blamed it on Russia. That was a Malaysian flight. I thought it was like 114.
Oh yeah, this I remember. There was a guest on my show who had a conspiracy theory that the plane wasn't shot, and I was like, no, it looks like the plane has been shot.
It had been strafed from the debris. You could see the bullet holes across it.
Yeah, exactly.
So that was local. it was definitely shot down. And there's no reason for Russia to shoot down a commercial plane. Like, they know it's going to get blamed on them. They are definitely losing the media war, right? The only one with an incentive to shoot down a commercial plane, knowing the whole media will blame their enemy, would be Ukraine, right? The media is 100% on Ukraine's side, right? Because I don't want to get your show banned.
Yes.
There's a particular set of supremacists.
There are interest coordinating, and they seem to have fully adhered to the Ukraine side. It wasn't a question at the beginning. Another point of the war I want to talk about is Kharkiv. Kharkiv has been surprisingly bombarded to the point by artillery that I was like, okay, they're planning this as their axis of entry to make a line to Dnipro and down to Odessa. However, the latest developments are that the Kharkiv front is withdrawing from the Russian side, that the Ukrainians are pushing back, attaining the border with Russia in some sectors. So what's happening with Kharkiv? Has it been a target at first, but eventually abandoned because too hard?
Well, it's the second biggest city. You're talking, there's millions of people there, and unless you want to do what the U.S. does, like when they went into Fallujah or any place in Vietnam where they just flatten a city, right? Kill all this, you know, just kill 50,000 civilians if they want. They're not going to do that. So they're really fighting on the outskirts of the city without actually hitting the city. And you're kind of forced to, you can't really let loose there, but the point of doing it is to pin soldiers there so that you make that threat there, right? Because there are things in there they could get, right? There's, you can get their factories, you can get things that are helping the war effort, but you have to be surgical about it and get in there, and you can blow up all the surrounding areas, block the roads, blockade it if you can encircle it. And so Ukraine's going to spend a lot of manpower to save their city. So it's kind of like Russia's getting them to spend a lot of energy, a lot of men, a lot of money to save a city that they absolutely have to do without putting a huge offense around it. You just need anything near it, right? If anybody's ever played like a video game when somebody's got the smallest army next to your capital city and most of your army's out in the field, you're like, dang it, I have to bring back something or build another thing to deal with this little thing, because I don't want them blocking off the roads and the water supply and whatever they want to do. So yeah, Russia will retreat and come back again. I mean, this, whatever. I mean, this, that's great, because the more people that leave the city and come out into those fields they retreat from, then they can come back and go, oh, you're a turtle out of its shell all of a sudden. You're not in the city. You don't have civilian meat shields. Clap. Here comes the rain, right? Mm. They're not going to cross the border or anything. And Russia, too, another reason is that so close to the border with Russia proper that they also need to have something in between themselves and their own cities. So it's a place that is kind of like a little miniature battle all around this city, where Russia has to have enough to occupy the time and keep them pinned there. And also, what's to stop them from just sending trucks and trucks full of men down to Donbass? Well, because the moment they leave the city, Russia will hit the roads and blow up the trucks, right? But you got to have a force there to do that. And so Russia's sitting outside the city. Well, then Ukraine's going to counterstrike and try and get them away from their city so that they can bring people out of the city. And so, you know, they got enough people there. You couldn't have a shorter supply line right next to your own second biggest city. So that's a hard thing to pin down. But they've been pretty successful in holding it so far. And it might not be necessary after a while. I think Izum is where it's at, and they've already broken. They've already got the bridgeheads there, and they've gotten past the tree lines, which is the important thing for tanks.
Now, so, last question on Kharkiv before we jump to Izium. Do you think that the victory from the Ukraine side of pushing back the Russian soldiers, do you think it's intentional withdrawal on the side of Russia, or do you think they just got beaten?
I think both. Let me explain how that can be. You go in to pin them down, like, but if they really put a concerted effort, we're not going to like hold the line and die here. We'll just go back. Right. Because Ukraine's still going to, they're not going to sit there and hold that field and start digging. Like, they're going to go back into their city. Mm-hmm. So that's going to ebb and flow a few times, most likely. And why do they, okay, fine. Hold the field. Cool. We'll put the new line next to that and we'll do a lot better there, because we don't have to worry about killing all the civilians that are in the city. Mm-hmm. You're still stuck there. Right. that you're not getting into Russia. That was your ground in the first place, right? You're getting back something that's supposed to be yours, but you're putting yourself in a much more vulnerable position. You're out of the city in a field and they don't have time to dig in. You're right next to the Russian border. Their Air Force could hit you all day, you know? So it's a thing. They need it for morale. They need it to try and free up the roads and things, because Donbass, and they're willing to do this because Donbass Eastern Front is so desperate for supplies that they're like, we got to push the Russians out of Kharkiv, out of the surrounding areas, so we can get things down to our boys. Well, go ahead. You know.
All right. And Izium, this has become the point of advancement of the Russian forces. I remember that the Russian forces were stopping at Izium at some point in this war. I remember seeing Izium completely leveled in terms of artillery shot and the city being completely dead and emptied of Ukrainian forces. And now we're seeing a contingent of Russia expanding, probably to close a circle. I don't know where it will be headed. Would it be headed?
Did you see the southeast, Slavyansk? It's like southeast of Izum. Slavyansk. You're down a little bit. Where those roads meet. It's near, kind of near Izium. You can see the circle. That's where they're going to meet.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they want to circle Slavyansk, and that's would be the next depot. Target. That's the supply depot.
Yeah, that's supplying the rest. And that's so Izium would have been the Thermopylae of Ukraine. If you know, if you going back to Persian Greek warfare, it was the river is like a lowercase N, and then you had trees, or like my hands are trees, and a little channel between the trees with the city sitting in the middle of the road, right? And so that was the place to make your stand, because tanks don't do well in the forest. Duh. Right. They can run over a lot of stuff and not going to run over a tree that's standing straight up. Mm-hmm. And anybody can pop out from behind a tree with a javelin. Forest is really good for Ukraine. So Russia had to, you can see that dark area. They had to get past that forest area. And so you can see, oh, it's good. You see on that map pretty well.
Yeah.
See that pink right through the middle. That's what they had to get through. They had to get through this city. And so they shelled the bejesus out of these, out of this forest area. I'm sure all that's burnt. And push with the tanks. Took some losses, but got through. It's called a bridgehead. Bridges don't have to always go over water. There is a small river there, though. I don't know if you can see it on the map, but it goes like, you can see the water clearly on my right-hand side. And it goes, you like upside down U kind of. They crossed that. They crossed Izium, and they're way south of it now. That pink on the bottom that looks like a finger pointing down is actually much wider than what they're showing on the map right now, as far as what's controlled. But this is a neat strategy by the Russians, where they went in sort of parallel columns, like you're spreading out dough or something, and those in the center, wherever the hole needs to be plugged, they're equal distance from wherever they need to be. And so wherever the Ukrainians do their counterstrike, they see it coming. They've got satellite info, everything, and they just plug it up. And methodically taking this area on the other side of Izum, because they don't want to get pushed back across Izum. That was a mother to take. Mm-hmm. Once they took that and they've got there, and it's happened. Now the encirclement is on, because the Ukrainian defense works aren't facing that direction. We're not expecting them to get through there, and yet they did. Now you're going to get artillery from two sides, right? You got to worry about it from different directions. It's just how you got to spread your defense lines. And Slavyansk, in my opinion, is what they're going for. And you can see three different columns going that way, right? Yeah, right there.
Is it the Popasna one?
Mm-hmm.
And one in the northeast, maybe?
Yep, right there.
Okay.
And then
so we might see Slavyansk in the same way with what happened with Mariupol, a successful encirclement, unlike Kiev and Kharkiv, which ended up in a strategic withdrawal.
Yeah, and it's that one in the northeast, I think, going to reach it first. That's what I think. Yeah. That's the one. They'll follow the road, most likely.
We've basically seen this being pulled around Kiev. One front from the west, one from the east or north, and then trying to bring some air force from the bottom, from south. Basically, they will pull the same on Slovyansk. I think, though, that there will be much more pressure to win this one without withdrawing.
Yeah, but they don't have a giant river to cross like they did in Kiev, and yeah. It's mostly open fields, which favors the Russians. But you know, this could take a long time because Ukraine has made really impressive trench work. They've really dug in, literally, and they're connecting the trenches with other trenches and even tunnels. They're like, it's an underground force right now. This is the war of the pickaxe and the shovel at this point.
Are they digging with shovels and pickaxe or with mechanized vehicles?
They can't really use mechanized vehicles. Those will get blown up. So it is, these are big boys with pickaxes and shovels doing the dirty work, literally, not to be a pun again, but they are getting in there. Now, where they can get maybe a drill or something, maybe some handheld mechanical things, but you can't go out there with a backhoe or a tractor or something like that. That will get murked right away. They do have entry points for vehicles, though. A few that they got, like they can't make any more because their artillery is there, but they have some that they already had, which will allow them a vehicle to go in. It's a small part where there's a tunnel, so it can park in there and unload and get supplies and go throughout the trench network. And then they got little mini trenches connecting the trenches. Pretty impressive. And Russia's well aware of this. And those entry points, they'll bomb, and then Ukraine will go and dig it up and build it back again. It's quite the game of cat and mouse. But the thing is, fine, great defense. That would take a lot of guys to overrun. But the clock is on Russia's side. They're not feeling the sanctions. We are. And Ukraine is. They're not running out of fuel. Ukraine is. Ukraine's losing 300 or 400 guys a day. Russia's losing about 30. They're taking very few casualties now. So they've found the sweet spot. What, 30 guys in a war? Not a bad day. They'll take those numbers, they'll take those odds and go, yeah, fine, we're gonna have to use a lot of ammo, but we have a lot of ammo, and weather too is going to affect those trenches and those guys, the fatigue. They got to have troop rotation. Not sure how long they're in there. I don't have that intel, but you're sitting there in the rain and it's cold, and like you're going to, people are starting to get sick. They're going to, you can't just sit outside in trenches for months and be healthy. You just won't. And Russia's like, they're not in those conditions. So they will sit back and hit you, and they'll have fresh guys. And Ukraine, they gave them the option to surrender, and they are in other places. But that area in the east is going to be a slow, methodical crunch, but Ukraine is slowly going to just lose its army without inflicting much offense at all.
So I guess the goal of conquering Slavyansk is that all of the soldiers in this location, these locations, would abandon, surrender, perhaps, if they are encircled?
Yeah, they'll have nothing to eat, and that's it. I mean, they won't have water, they don't have anything. So yeah, you get Slavyansk, and below that is, I think it's called Karayama. There was an airfield. They can't use it, but they still have to have it so that they can't rebuild it, or use it for helicoptering things in. So they're done. It's just a matter of time. Like, the writing's on the wall. And I don't think of anything they can do to get out of this situation. I can't think of a weapon or a tactic of how to not get encircled. And all they can do is make it difficult with the trenches, just say, and hope NATO sends them more gear. But even if NATO really doesn't matter other than America, honestly, and even if the U.S. sent its best gear, Russia still has better gear. And the best things the U.S. has, Ukraine doesn't even know how to use. And they wouldn't have the spare parts, and they wouldn't have the, you'd have to have American soldiers actually get involved. And the public just doesn't want that. They're like, they got enough problems. They're running out of baby formula, partly because of a government monopoly with the WIC program, had to close down a factory, and they didn't, and the other ones didn't have enough.
Yeah, we have learned today that there was a consent decree with the FDA. The government and the baby formula producer, Abbott, have a plan to restart the plant within 2 weeks. They have agreed with certain conditions, but still, it has scared a lot of people who are raising children.
Yeah, and the other thing is the supplies they did have, the Biden administration sent it to Mexico, it to the border for illegals. That is messed up, man. You've got empty shelves, but people who are illegally in your country, a lot of them a little bit nefarious, have fully stocked and free baby formula that you paid for, but your baby cannot have it. And that, you know, that has nothing to do with Ukraine. That's just the Biden regime right there. And okay, plants. Oh, you have to shut down a plant, but if they wouldn't be in that situation if there wasn't a monopoly, and there wouldn't be a monopoly if it wasn't the government contracts from the WIC program all going to, they didn't spread that out. They put it all in one because they're, you know, it's profiteering, insider trading, classic Yankee mercantilism. And then, something happened to that. Now you don't have any baby formula. I'll tell you what, the baby formula that is in the WIC program, it's got like corn syrup and all this nasty stuff in it. If you can breastfeed, do it. Obviously they would. I mean, the people that buy baby formula because you don't have enough breast milk or you don't have any at all or whatever, that happens for a lot of people. You know, I'm thinking when I'm going to Texas this June, going to the Ron Paul conference, I might take a spare suitcase and just fill it with baby formula from Japan. And give it away because it's a lot healthier than what you get in the U.S.
There are lots of grades of baby formula. You look at the ingredients, they vary a lot across different companies and different levels of quality.
Oh, yes, yes. And the Japanese baby formula is just better than any of the things they got in the U.S. because the rules, it's not run by big pharma. Right. So they're not going to put corn syrup in baby formula in Japan. They don't even put it in soft drinks. They have sugar in soft drinks, but that won't happen.
Stephen J. James sends a super chat. He says, let's imagine Russia starts struggling or starts to lose this war. What do you think Putin would do?
He'd sue for peace, but I mean, that's like a silly hypothetical. They've been preparing for this. I mean, what are they? Is Ukraine going to invade Russia? Like, they don't lose anything. They'd have, worst case scenario is Donbass, that, you know, Luhansk and Donetsk would be part of Ukraine. It would suffer, and you'd have lots of refugees fleeing into Russia because they're not going to live under Ukraine, because Ukraine would probably just round them up and murder them. And so Russia would still gain a sizable ethnic Russian population. And they would lose territory that was never theirs, you know, whatever. But that's, you know, I don't think people understand. In their mind, it's not even a war yet. This is a special military operation. It's 250,000 soldiers. Russia has 150 million people. They could man up a million person army if they needed to, right? If Finland gets uppity, they will, because they don't see them as brothers the way they do Ukrainians. And Finland is nothing compared to Ukraine. Ukraine's the second strongest military in Europe. Russia's the first.
So what about this Finland situation? We've seen the development where Finland and Sweden want to join NATO. Will it happen? Will Russia stop it? And if they stop it, I guess that these countries will have deals of protection with the U.S. So there would be a conflict somewhat involving the U.S.
Finland's first problem is they elected a 36-year-old woman to lead the country.
Wow. I didn't right realize there. This.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that. I don't know. I mean, it's like, okay, let's aim at the middle of the bell curve for the leader. You could, of all the people that live there, millions of people, you got a 36-year-old woman. And she doesn't know what, she doesn't know anything. All it's just doing NATO. Ukraine just got invaded for, you know, basically being de facto NATO, having NATO trained troops, NATO weapons, NATO everything. They're not NATO, but they're NATO. So Russia invaded Finland, way smaller than Ukraine, shares a long border with Russia. Thinks is the genius idea. Let's join NATO. Then NATO will protect us. They won't. And they can't. Won't. No, they will not.
So Russia could just move in Finland and there would be limited capacity for the US to respond.
They wouldn't even have time. It'd be over so fast. And Finland, what's the population of Finland? It's less than 10 million. Like Sweden's the large one of the three, right? That it's the size of North Carolina. Sweden is a little bit, but Finland is nothing. Like it's, they'd have to do it because it would be a massive threat to Russia to have them in NATO, because the US has talked about putting F-35As, which can carry nuclear warheads, in Finland. Mm-hmm. And just think about it. What would America do if Russia put an aircraft that could carry nuclear weapons in Mexico? They'd invade Mexico. Well, actually, we don't even have to guess. What would happen if they put nuclear missiles or something that could deliver nuclear weapons in Cuba? They'd invade Cuba. We did. It's called the Bay of Pigs. Like, they're not going to allow nuclear weapons within range of their major cities. No state would. And yet we think this is the exceptionalism, right? Let's put F-35 with nuclear weapons in Finland, which shares a long border with Russia. You could hit Petersburg, Moscow, all that in minutes. Not going to happen. And if you're making that threat, saying we're going to put nuclear weapons in Finland, well, guess who has the most nuclear weapons on Earth? Russia. Guess who has hypersonic and supersonic missiles and you don't? Russia. And Finland, this isn't the winter war of 39 or whatever. This is now. And they don't have much of a military or sizable population. There's zero defense for cruise missiles and whatnot. And Russian Navy could get them too. Like, that is so stupid. But this woman thinks, yeah, let's apply to NATO. Okay. Goodbye, Finland. You're part of Russia now. Like,
perhaps there will what, no would, be- what would save her might be a refusal, a rejection from NATO.
I think Turkey will say no. You're not coming in. Somebody, it just takes one member. But she is just, what an idiot. Like, you're already an ally. Like, you don't have to be in NATO, right? The difference is, when you're in NATO, you're not in charge of yourself anymore. Mm-hmm. Wait, is now they have some autonomy. There's other problems with NATO even then, but, you know, NATO has attacked other countries. They attacked Libya. Like, people have seen what NATO does. Russia's not going to allow them on their front door. Like, they've made this really clear, and we're just, you know, the insanity. Well, yeah, in Sweden, why? You just, oh, let's see. Okay, it'll just be Norway up there. That's it. I mean, you will not exist if you pull this move. NATO, it's, Europe is not, this isn't World War II era, right? They've demilitarized because they just rely on the U.S. to do everything. Mm-hmm. And so other than a little bit France, maybe, and UK, the UK has 80,000 guys standing army. I mean, that they have a lot of stuff. They have a big Navy and all, but they don't have a military. They don't have the personnel. And right now, these soy boys, I don't think they do it. France either. Germany has nothing. I mean, there's nothing there. There's no. What army in Europe? Tell me, like, where is the side? Yes, U.S., fine. What do they have? In the U.S., even, well, they got 5 or 6 brigades they could put in there. Like, the Air Force, and they have nuclear weapons and things, but they're not going to stop the ground invasion of anything. Like, the little bases they have, that's not going to hold off very long. I mean, it's like you said earlier, that's for like pounding on third world countries. Like, this is Russia, a peer to peer fight. We are not ready for that. And the US public won't stomach it. It's just, you know, ooh, we're going to lose this much for Finland. And we're not. I can tell you that right now. I mean, the $40 billion in aid is almost half as much as what they gave away to the Taliban. How mad people are about that. Technically, the Taliban took it. They got like $80 billion worth of weapons. They had the most modern military in Asia almost because of all the stuff they took from the United States.
Yeah.
That's like 2 years of defense spending that they fight Russia that they got in a day. All the gear they just left in the graveyard of empires. Well, you know, we just lost to the Taliban. You want to start a fight with Russia in Europe, right? It's not, yeah, the U.S. can defend itself from Alaska or something, but you want to go to Finland. Mm-mm. Like, this is, the U.S. is not, it's not a cartoon. It can't, they're not that powerful. Like, they, you know, you can look at the defense spending and go, well, they spend, you know, seven times as much as Russia, but yeah, making things more expensive doesn't make them stronger. Mm-hmm. Just makes them more expensive.
Stephen J. James. Yeah. Stephen J. James says Ukraine is in full mobilization, numbering hundreds of thousands of men and 2 months to train them. If NATO is able to supply infinite arms to them, Russia does have a problem. Do you think that's the case?
Well, they got a problem with the trench warfare, but they're fully mobilized and they got 200,000 guys. Russia's got 250,000 guys, but Russia's got a lot more that they're not using in reserves. They haven't really declared war, but the endless supplies from NATO depends on what those supplies are. So far, what it's actually been has been trash. They're trying to get rid of like old obsolete stuff that they just send to Ukraine. They keep the good stuff themselves, or they replace the old stuff with new generation equipment, right? It's falling apart. Like, okay, your best artillery, longest range, is a tow howitzer that just arrived yesterday or 2 days ago, excuse me. And it doesn't have that much ammo and you don't have a way to get it to the front line. You could bring that down to Odessa or something like Donbass. Forget about it. You lost that. You could defend the border. The Western Ukraine is a real problem because NATO can get supplies there easily and fix them in place. But I don't think Russia wants to take Western Ukraine. They want Donbass. That's the stated reason. Demilitarize, denazify it, and liberate these regions that had been attacked by Ukraine for the last 8 years in a row.
Yeah, the media wants to set the threshold for Russia so high. They don't want to take them to their stated word, but it's a very clever thing to do to say, okay, maybe that's maybe they're just being honest. The leftist media doesn't want to explore that possibility. I wanted to talk to you about Western Ukraine, and that's an image of an airstrike around the Kharkiv region, a warehouse with ammonium nitrate. We've seen also Lviv explosions
That was still in the east.
Yeah, that was in Kharkiv, the east.
Not Kherson. That was,
yeah, yes, that was Kharkiv. But I wanted to say, just before the show began, there were several explosions in Lviv. Are you satisfied about what Russia is doing in the west of Ukraine in terms of neutralizing their ability to pass in material? Because it seems that Ukraine can still restock, can still receive politicians from outside at times, and can still have train operating. Isn't that a problem if it feeds the resistance at some point in the front?
Well, they can play around on the western half of the country, but not much of it is getting to the front other than packing it in civilian cars, because they did take out train networks. And the theater in the west, the first stage was they took out the airfields and they took out any above ground ammo depot and fuel depots. That's out. Now, you can ship fuel in from abroad, like Poland has fuel. Anybody, you know, Moldova, they can bring it into Ukraine. But as soon as you get it in there, like, how? You're going to bring it in trucks? You don't have a pipeline or anything. So if you're bringing in trucks, that's very high risk of just getting kaboomed. And so every time they see them cross the border with this stuff and they've got clear bird's eye view of it from the sky, they can target that and blow it up. They're going to have to disguise it in different ways, have a lot of decoys and only one real one. There's ways around it to get some things to the front, but they're losing more than they're gaining each time. So that's the math on it. Russia is forcing them to do a lot for very little return, but they're going to do it because NATO doesn't have a skin in a game. Like, okay, we lose some fuel, we lose whatever, we'll just print money. They don't care. The government people are wealthy as hell and are not feeling the squeeze. Yeah. It's their population that is. But I think what they're getting, and Macron got reelected against Le Pen, whatever. Other than that, though, a lot of, you know, Hungary went on Russia's side, right? That a lot of elections are coming up. And I think with the economic situation the way it is and the war not benefit them at all, and the fact that they're supporting neo-Nazis and things, I think a lot of the public and a lot of these European states are going to change leadership. And then you will not get those supplies because you will have nowhere to land them. Poland is steadfast, just neocon, right? But most of, like, Slovakia, like all these states, they're not going to, they're going to have a sea change here soon and votes of no confidence, because they are really feeling the gas shortages in particular, and they're in the food shortages and the price hikes, and Russia is not. They had to tighten their belt in the beginning. Now the ruble's up. They're, you know, they get plenty of things from China. I mean, they're fine. Europe is suffering. The public is, and the public will put pressure on the politicians. And so Russia sees, okay, you're entrenched. We're shelling you. We're slowly just wiping out all your guys. You only have a certain number of military age men. And okay, we'll do this all summer long. You'll lose 400 or 500 a day. Go ahead, keep feeding them into the meat grinder. We're not losing anything except a little bit of ammo, you know? Oh, I don't know. Like, I've thought about it. Like, okay, well, what could they do? You could try your counterstrikes in Kherson. You could try to, they've done the things that I thought, oh, you could do this, and it didn't work. You could try to pull Moldova into it. You know, if you really want to go to World War III over Transnistria, I don't think most people do, but you know, that's, they'll, you know, it won't matter if they do it, they do it. NATO needs a great awakening. Like, they don't have enough to even feed, and that even people as far away as Britain are having to choose between heating or eating. Mm-hmm. Right. And they're thinking, oh, but we won't need the fuel for heating for the summer. Yeah. But what comes after that? Cold again, you know? Yeah. Like, it's so stupid. And there's some places, like, you know, I mean, if you're in Scotland or Ireland, whatever, it's always cold until summer. You need to heat your house. And if you're using electricity, you're still using fuel, right? The Germans, in their ever, you know, green genius, shut off their nuclear power. Well, that was stupid. Mm-hmm. This green energy doesn't work. They have to buy nuclear power from France, and they have to import enormous amounts of gas and oil from Russia. And Russia's saying, pay it in rubles. They just cut the electricity off to Finland.
For yeah, now, it seems 10%. That most countries have decided to go the way Russia was demanding.
They have to. And Russia knew that. Putin, he's got contingencies, man. Like, they, it kind of, it's embarrassing. They've got, you know, they're for Lavrov and Putin and these people. We've got Kamala Harris and Anthony Blinken. They just, Russia's the big country. That's what we're, a woman again. Like, why are they there? Is like, she shouldn't be there. She just, what? She's got a brown vagina, so it had a lot of check boxes for intersectionality. So they just picked her to be vice president. You know, like, you can't just pick somebody. I think it's what happened. It is what happened.
Fractalman sends a super chat. He says, what is Russia's end game here? How far do they ultimately want to go? Will countries in the Baltic be their next target?
Depends on how they behave, but their goal, their stated goal, is independent states for Donbass. So that's two regions, Luhansk and Donetsk, and demilitarization and no NATO for Ukraine. But it appears that they're just going to keep Mariupol. They're gonna landlock Ukraine. Maybe they'll leave Odessa. It depends. you can oversaturate with artillery in the east. They don't need all that there. They got enough to pin them down and slowly crunch the land. So Odessa is still in the crosshairs. But I think Odessa will be a bargaining chip. It's something that Russia will return. It's a sacrificial pawn. Like, we'll take it, and then in negotiations, we'll return that in order for you to agree with X, Y, Z. That's what I think. But I don't know. I mean, that's... But I've been
so
right
we've
so
seen
far.
A strategic withdrawal around Mykolaiv. I think that the forces had overextended there. They had been successful at taking over Kherson quite fast, but the path to Odessa had many rivers to cross, and they were kind of looking like they were going to encircle Mykolaiv. But at this point, it seems a Ukrainian counteroffensive has pushed back the forces more around Kherson. Is that the same thing? Do you think they'll go back to it?
Kherson is, so that's the part they had to take. That's the one of the other, besides Mariupol City, they had to have, because that's where the counterstrike to this whole envelopment could occur, because they don't have to cross the giant river. They can just go through. You can see the Dnieper. Yeah, there it's crossable, right? It gets much wider as you go, you know, all the way up to Kiev right there. You're not, that's a big, that's a wall, right? Mm-hmm. Big, fat, thick, miles and miles of water. You ain't getting through that. So they had to take that city in the west, in the center, really. Mm-hmm. And that they have to hold so they don't have counterstrikes, right? That would go all the way back to Mariupol and you'd be at ground one again. But you can't really extend too far past it either, deep into Ukraine. Why? Right? You just need to hold where you are so your other boys can finish up in the east. You've got a natural defense barrier with the river, pretty much. And then you've got, you know, short supply lines from Crimea straight up. Now, the Navy was going to soften up Odessa, but U.S. intelligence and probably Black Ops, to be honest, are hitting Russian ships out there. And they've mined the waters. And so that's difficult. It's not the Ukrainian Navy. It's the batteries on the land that are shooting Neptunes and missiles and things with U.S. satellite intel and U.S. gear. And that's something you don't really have to use. You just put the system in place, hit fire, you know. And so that will be a problem. The aquatic front on Odessa has to deal with America. And that sucks. But did you see the attempted retake of Snake Island? What a disaster.
I've seen news about it, but I haven't looked into in depth. So what happened?
So they tried to they shut down the Thor system, electronic warfare, cyber warfare. They shut down the Tor system, not Thor, excuse me, the TOR. So the anti-air had a dark spot for a second. And the U.S. knows where these are. That's why they won't bomb the bridge to Crimea. They can't get near it. There's all these overlapping ovals of anti-air. You're not getting there. And with what? What are you going to hit it with? So they found a dark spot. It went down. Did it go down or did they turn it off? I don't know. Because what happened next, they ferried them in with helicopter. They put special forces on the ground and then turns on and boom. Helicopters were blown up on top of their guys. And they try to say these are Russians. Like, why are Russians helicoptering in an island they already controlled, immediately hitting the ground and getting in defensive positions, right? It was, and they had British and Americans are now missing. I'm like, they probably were in that fireball. But okay, if they're wandering around Snake Island, good luck. They're captured now. That's a nice prisoner to have, right? Those are people who matter. They're from rich countries, right? That would have been great morale because Snake Island was part of the propaganda, the break. It was all baloney, you know.
Fuck Russia yourself, has it. Russian ship. I don't know what they said. Yeah, but it was
they had like
to their
footage from a video game they were showing. It was completely fake. Same with Ghost of Kiev. It was like a video game. They didn't. Nobody. Yeah, I shot down 60 planes. They even said it was Sam Hyde.
I mean, so basically, they were Ukrainian helicopters or perhaps NATO sympathetic and mercenaries helicopters.
It was a mixture of mercenaries and Ukrainians, and they got starched. They just took that towel and, you know, that everything that could fly was blown up, like four different things, helicopters, support drones, jets, everything just gone. And then everybody on the ground dead or captured. So bravo, their special forces aren't so special.
So when I look at this red area dominated by Russia in Ukraine, they have good coverage of air defenses like that pretty much everywhere, covering all this territory.
Yep, that's why they're not getting bombed. I mean, like, they would have sent them in more. Trust me, they're talking about $40 billion in aid, right? That's plenty of jets and toys. Mm-hmm. They didn't send them in because they're like, they're just going to get blown up the first day.
Yeah,
this is the air is like Russia rules the skies because their anti-air is number one and their air force is like number seven. And Ukraine's not even on that list. So, you know, Russia rules the sky. There's drone. I guess that's air. There's drone warfare and they can get some very nice drones from NATO and the U.S. But again, anti-air is taking those out, too. They already have U.S. satellite imagery for the macro stuff. So they know where Russia is and where they're moving, where their positions are. They enjoy that bird's eye view from the United States. But Russia has the same bird's eye view of Ukraine from their own satellites. So that's that. When there's a large cloud cover, it's when they move. You know, that's why you need drones. Those satellites don't see through clouds. So, you know, they do have thermal vision and all that. So the drones will see you. Blimps and things too, they can see you at night. And that's again that someone mentioned earlier, a lot of that old gear isn't protected from that. It glows in the dark, basically. It's so hot and it's just so easy to target. And the people are like, oh, we'll just let's send in some M77 and blah, blah. They don't know what they're talking about specifically. It just sounds cool, it's got lots of letters and numbers, or whatever. But this is obsolete military gear. We're on like the sixth generation of that howitzer, like, and they're getting Gen 1. It's towed. It's not as fancy as it sounds. And then I think Germany's sending in some of the new whatever Panzer, I forget what it's called, the new Panzers. Mm-hmm. This isn't World War II again. And like great. Go fight a tank warfare against Russian tanks. That didn't work last time either, even when Germany did it itself. It's just, it's feel good and it's military industrial complex profiteering. It placates the public like, oh, look, they're using Ukraine as an excuse to spend enormous amounts of money to get rid of obsolete military equipment so they can replace it with new stuff. Mm-hmm. And Germany's also said, we're going to spend whatever, $100 billion or something ridiculous rebuilding the German military. I'm like, that's a little scary. Germany's rearming again. No, I mean, how many years will it take before that happens? How are you going to do that when you have food shortages and energy sources? And now you're going to rebuild your military, which relies on fuel, by the way. It's politicians just lying to the public and saying stuff that sounds good, but doesn't work in reality. They need to normalize relations with Russia. Germany needs oil and gas from Russia. Just buy it.
Yeah.
Sue for peace, trade with each other, stop supporting Nazis, you know. But this whole thing, they will not let it go because Ukraine is massive black market money, money laundering, human trafficking, and arms sales for a certain class of people who don't care about death and destruction. All they care about is commercial interests.
Which is terrible because all of this money injected in a dark hole like this, it's going to have repercussions for the elite for the coming decades, and it will be their playground to pass in arms and money and human trafficking. Yep. It's absolutely disgusting. What in the end, it's good. The Ukrainians are the one who will suffer most from this entire campaign from the West.
Oh, absolutely. Except for Donbass. I mean, they're being liberated, but there's going to be a gap of men between certain ages in Ukraine. Like the DNA of that country is gone. Like all those guys, I'm sure Europe's like, oh, tons of Ukrainian women refugees, please stop. No, but seriously, they're emptying out their population and they're killing their young able-bodied males. Mm-hmm. It's just sad. My hope to stop this whole thing is the European public of different states to change leadership and say, no, US is not, we can't until 2024, right? So that's why they started it when they did. This was the plan the whole time. Barack Obama and and Joe Biden started this, right? And then they thought Hillary was going to get in and she didn't. But as soon as Trump was out and Biden was in, they went right back to Ukraine as like nothing happened, went right back to the plan.
And as the French author Philippe Fabry points out, it's going to matter a lot if European parties can align themselves with Russia rather than see Russia always as the big evil, but have an option for the European people to vote for more Russia understanding parties.
Yeah, or even their own interests. I mean, it's in your own economic interest to be friends with Russia. Russia didn't attack you. They're attacking people who attacked Donbass, okay? Ethnic Russians were being like 13 to 14,000 people were murdered in the last 8 years. And they walled people up in a building and set it on fire. And they burned them to death, including children. Like Ukraine arrested their opposition party, closed down opposition media. It's a dictatorship.
Yeah, it would be so easy to have a smear of Ukraine.
Right, like they're... The public doesn't know the history of Ukraine. Like Zelensky is a thug. It's run by the mob, right? Ihor Kolomoisky is a thug. All these oligarchs in Ukraine don't care about Ukraine. They're just using you to soak up your resources. You have billionaires in the poorest country in Europe. All billionaires with passports to foreign country A that are doing to Ukraine what they had been doing to Russia, and Putin kicked them out. And so they moved right there. And they're, we're going to get revenge on Russia. This is going to be Russia's Afghanistan. We're going to suck them in. We're going to dig trenches. We're going to play defensive war and kill Russians. Right? That was the plan. Well, Russia's like, we're not going to go charging into the Viper's pit. We're going to sit back and just lob artillery at you all day and slowly grind you down until you run out of guys. Mm-hmm. Sad. And they're like, well, we'll just get more guys. It's sick, man. This is a... It's human sacrifice at this point. Like, what are you doing? You're not taking these areas again. You don't, what are you going to invent a new artillery that outranges Russia all of a sudden? You don't have hypersonic. You don't have supersonic. They do. The first one they used was on the anniversary of the second Iraq war, by the way. Mm-hmm. Russia pulled that out on March 20th. That was telling. They had their Victory Day parade. You know, there's been a reshuffling in the FSB of intelligence too, because they're just as bad as the CIA. They sell wolf tickets like any intelligence agency. It's government, right? Like that government lies, right? Well, Putin has gone through like 50 of them fired and replaced. We never do that. I mean, Trump fired Bolton, I guess. Yeah. At the very end, he brought in Douglas MacGregor and he got rid of Esper and but it was like the seat changing was when you had a month and a half left. And boy, that would have been great if he had those, if he had the crew he had in as a lame duck the whole time. Oh, sure. America would be colonizing Mars by now. Mm-hmm. But no, he had in John Bolton and Mark Esper, and these just neocon losers. And now it's gotten worse with Blinken and Nuland, and the State Department is basically run by Israel at this point. Mm-hmm. You know, it's sad. But what another result of this, though, is Israel's getting more aggressive in Syria. Russia has its hands full. So they've been hitting Damascus multiple times last week. ISIS is growing. Al-Qaeda is getting a presence back. Like, look at what you're doing. You're empowering Nazis and Wahhabi Salafist Al-Qaeda fighters. Bravo. What's next? Right? Mm-hmm. So like, you're going to give away crack pipes? Oh, wait. You did. It was a $30 million bill to give away crack pipes, because dirty pipes are the problem. It's not the crack that's in the pipe. It's the pipe is dirty. It pollutes their crack. Right. That's why. What are you doing? Let's just give them drugs so they don't have to do it underground. They can freely smoke crack. But this isn't the same argument you could get for some other drug. It's crack. The moderate amount of crack is none. There is no, I just occasionally casually smoke crack when I'm with friends. You know, I only in social situations, you know, have a couple beers, maybe smoke some crack. Like there is no crack amount. Like you could have two beers, maybe one joint, whatever. Like, just one bowl of crack. You know, like, mm-hmm.
Today we were seeing the celebration by the Ukrainian that they had attained the borders with Russia. We've seen them bring a 6x6 wooden post that they have set to reconquer their territory, basically, with the border of Russia. Are you moved by these images? That's around Kharkiv.
It saddens me because a lot of the Ukraine war has been theater. And it's run by a theater, like not only Zelensky, but half his cabinet are theater people.
I mean, you just would like think that it's run in San Francisco theater by a bunch of graphic designers.
Right. Yeah. It's just like, it's, you know, it's the war of the limp-wristed, the digital graphic designer, whatever. You know, you've got a musical theater flunky that is now the head of the Ministry of Truth singing kosher Mary Poppins songs in the U.S., and you've got theater guy Trudeau's from theater in Canada. Zelensky's from theater. Macron's from acting in theater. Like, this is who's running the show. And it's why they're doing very well on Twitter and online. They look like they're just kicking everyone's ass. But it's like, okay, great propaganda. Really keeps up morale. Thinks you're on the verge of winning. We're going to go stick a post in the ground. Like a wood. Like anyone will even see that. It's a 6x6. No one will even know that's there. You know what I mean? Like, but it's good optics. Look at us. We're going to put that. This is Iwo Jima, man. We're just raising the flag, aren't we? We're going to go stick a fucking stick somewhere in the woods with yellow and blue on it. Hooray. Like, they don't know what they're doing. The territory exchanging hands doesn't matter so much as how many men are you losing? How many men are they losing? Their goal is to demilitarize you. They do that by killing your military. They don't care if you move over there or move over here. You die there. You die there. You're not in Russia, right? You don't have any of their territory. It's like, well, we focused all on this area and they moved. I'm like, yeah, they just moved over here. And now you lost a different area. It's sad that they're willing to sacrifice real strategic and tactical advantages to look good, right? This is the Instagram war. Look at this. This looks cool to people who don't know anything about anything. Like, we took the hill or something. It's that sort of silliness, right?
Yeah, and this reminds me of Revealing Ukraine and the other Ukraine on Fire, because we saw in there that the Democrats were concerting with Ukrainian officials and the CIA and all. They were all together to train the Ukrainians at using social media better. And I think that what we're seeing right now is a product of this training that happened maybe 6-7 years ago.
Yeah, and remember the White House invited the TikTok superstars to a meeting, virtual meeting, where they're going to have tell the top TikTok influencers what their line needs to be on Ukraine.
Yeah.
Right? This is the Karl Rove's old message force multipliers. Let's all tell the same lie at the same time over and over again, Goebbels style, and people believe it. The problem with these lies, just like lying about WMDs or whatever, and you had every single channel saying that too, and they didn't exist, is reality is going to bite you in the ass. They're going to be like, what happened? I thought we were winning. We were doing so well on TikTok and Twitter. And then you lost Kherson and Mariupol. You lost two cities, right? They're like, well, you know, there's still the Azov holdout. Yeah, they sealed that up. They're like, don't let anyone in or out. Because they don't have any food, and they're just going to come out, and you can just arrest them. They lost 260 today, but that is on top of 1,000 that surrendered already, right? And probably 800 killed. So, you know, that's gone. You're captured. You're done, and we're taking all your gear. They're not going to have a breakout situation out of the Azov steel factory. They're hiding underground. The moment they come up from air, they're getting smacked with artillery. Or they're, unless it's with the white flag, right? They're done. They did. There's, you know, great resolve. You're a bunch of badasses, well-trained, up to NATO standards. You know, neo-Nazis do fight. That's one thing they're good at, is fighting. But about it. But, you know, you're not Superman. You got played. Your strategy failed, right? You thought you were doing better than you were, which is a problem without, you know, this is the yes man problem. It's kind of a problem with Vietnam. They didn't want to deliver any bad news. Mm-hmm. Well, if you're not getting the truth, then you keep making mistakes. Russia got the bad news and changed. They altered their plan. Ukraine's getting nothing but everything's great. Every day, oh, we're winning. We're winning so hard. You're going to get sick of winning. They're doing a Trump speech over there, and you're not winning. Although Trump, man, he had a rally in Texas. They called it, have you seen this ultra MAGA thing the left came out with? Insult them. And they're like, that's pretty badass, ultra MAGA. And it's just this big dude in the MAGA hat. Like, okay, cool. He goes, yeah, we're ultra MAGA. We had ultra low gas prices. We had ultra low unemployment. He just went down the list of how things were so much better than when Biden got in office. And they're laughing it up. And then he's like, and we got vaccines. And it was like, dead silent. He's reading the room wrong on that one. He's like, come on. And they're like, no, come
this
on.
This keeps stunning me how Trump doesn't understand he got elected by people who are scared the shit out of vaccines.
Yeah, they like, well, it's not really a vaccine. They just keep calling it one. But like, it's not the vaccine. It's the overreaction to the virus of locking down every business and the theatrics with masks. Like, what's the point? I mean, you're a biologist. Why would they say, oh, the restaurant has to close at 8 o'clock? Well, was the virus just hiding until 7:59 and mm-hmm. then it comes out at night? Like, or you walk in somewhere with a mask and then you sit down and take it off. So it's
arbitrary
only up here.
Rules wherever yeah, the government just, shows up. Ryan,
you don't need
we
to be
headed,
a scientist to know how stupid that is, right?
Yeah. We are headed toward the conclusion. It was awesome. You are extremely insightful. And I thank you because it had been a while since I hadn't updated myself on the Ukraine situation. So it looks like it's long, but we have to understand that it's the game that is being played by Russia. They have set yep. themselves for a comfortable spot in a war of attrition, basically.
It's a war of attrition where the clock's on their side. So it's artillery versus trenches at this point. But they see the suffering economically in European states, and they're not feeling the squeeze. And you know, if they need to bring the boys over from Siberia, the real hard hitters, they will. They've got so many contingency plans, and so they're sitting pretty. West is desperate, and they're like, lie about it harder, and that's just not going to work.
And one tool to lie is Twitter, perhaps as a last news item. Twitter deal is still happening. Musk says not out of the question, but at lower price. Is Musk just posing as a potential buyer of Twitter just to dump them and to basically expose Twitter for its wrongs and eventually crash the company?
I think he wants Twitter for the data for his AI projects, right? It's okay. A lot of human data that he could get. That could be a thing. I think he also enjoyed it. He enjoyed the mudslinging shit fest as a Spurg. It was just fun for him. I mean, you think when you have 200 something billion dollars, what can you not get in instantly? Like, well, the entertainment of the political shit fest on Twitter, but now it's all one direction. They banned everyone interesting and intelligent. So he wants that back. He's like, oh, that was fun. I missed that. Oh, I know. I'll go buy it. You know, but he realized they were talking about this yesterday. This is mainstream media. So I haven't verified this. I've only seen it in mainstream media. So 90% of Twitter is bots, not 5%. And if it's that many bots and not that many organic users, then no wonder your ads aren't selling, right? It's all fake. It's as fake as the good news about Ukraine, right? Twitter is fake. And like, mm-hmm. well, I'm not spending this much money on that because you told me there was only about 5% were bots. And this is after the paper shredding, right? You saw a lot of accounts suddenly lose a lot of followers, right? All these leftists lost followers and all these people on the right gained followers. So they unshadow banned real people and they started shaving off bots where they can. They're in a scramble mode. How do we get rid of all these? They can't. There's so many fucking bots that you cannot explain that mass exodus, right? Mm-hmm. Well, I'm leaving Twitter because Musk is getting it. No. Bots. Yeah, this is like, well, I'm moving to Canada if Bush gets elected. Right.
Well, Twitter could get me back on. They banned me on the basis that they said I was a spammer. Yet I was a human being. Here I am, you know, look at my body. I'm a physical being. I'm not a bot, and they banned me. They could get one more human on their count.
Me too. I wasn't banned for, I was banned like, I don't know, a lot of times, like a dozen at least. And I first one got banned because Black Lives Matter said I was threatening all of them by myself. Mm-hmm. What happened was they talked all this shit in Osaka, and I went out there dressed in Confederate flag, everything, and no one had anything to say to my face. And I put the film up saying, look, they said they're going to beat me up, kill me, all this crap. And I went there smiling, full gear, everything. I'm like, hey, I'm against police abuse too, but I don't see how that's related to looting and burning cities and shit. You're just hurting your own movement, right? Mm-hmm. Of course, Black Lives Matter, all lives matter. Oh, you can't say that. I'm like, well, but they do. All lives matter. Like, there's no, you're not like the single victim of police abuse. And when you claim you are, you're alienating everyone else that is, right? The youth gets abused by police of any color, whatever. But anyway, they had nothing to fucking say in person because, hey, this ain't Twitter, you know? This is a 220-pound guy that does martial arts, mm-hmm. is a lot bigger than any of you, and you got nothing to fucking say. And they're all, the whole thing was a bunch of soy. Like, everybody there was just decrepit fucking pussy guys, right? And mostly women, actually. I couldn't tell if it was a woman or a man in some cases. It's one of those androgynous, weird, and it's all foreigners. Like, mm-hmm. there were no Japanese there.
That was in every Japan? Corner there.
It was in Japan. They had a, because Naomi Osaka got behind the rally. She's this, like, mixed-race tennis player. And she's the one that started flaming me on Twitter. I'm like, what's going on? I get all this hate all of a sudden. Somebody with this super large account. She's the one that lit the Olympic torch.
Okay,
right?
Yeah.
And I'm like,
the one who's
a depressed athlete,
right?
Right, yeah. When she has a bad day, a menstrual cycle, whatever, she just quits. She quit in the Olympics, right? Mm-hmm. She's like, I can't finish, whatever. Or no, she didn't quit. She just lost.
No,
you know why you lost the Olympics? Because you can't use steroids in the Olympics. They test you. And so all these steroid athletes suddenly who were number one in the world just fucking quit or dropped off. Because, like, yeah, you didn't want to fail your test. That's what happened. But anyway, she's an ugly son of a bitch, too. But she went after me. I'm like, and they were like, people call me racist on this shit. I'm like, do you know me? I argue with racists. Like, I've got mixed race kids. I'm not racist. I didn't say anything bad about blacks. And I never would, never have. What I was saying is, you're doing this in this name, right? You got the word black in your title, and all throughout the U.S., you're toppling statues and setting Target on fire and looting places and all. And it's like a bunch of white kids in Portland, and it's a bunch of black people in Ferguson. It's mixing, whatever. You had a bunch of felons do millions of dollars of damage in Kenosha until Kyle the Chad Rittenhouse shot 3 communists, 2 pedophiles. You know, you don't want that in your name and in your movement. I said, if I see somebody break a window or loot a store, I'm going ham. Ham means hard as a motherfucker. That means to a criminal that committed a criminal act, not to, they interpreted that as you hate black people. What the fuck, dude? It's like, don't loot a store. How is that? It's like, obey the law. How is that controversial? It shouldn't be. But they're like on a heat seeking missile witch hunt to find a racist to burn. Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm like, if you only knew, like, I have gone on in deep into the basement. I've argued with David Duke. I've argued with all the heel turn people. I've argued with all, you know, I'm not even going to name them. They don't deserve it. But I've gone in, listened, but I didn't just yell Nazi and drop the bike. I heard everything they had to say and gave them a counter argument. Right. They don't know who I am. I have been standing up for indigenous rights, Palestinian rights, Iraqi rights, Black American rights my whole life. And then I got banned from Twitter because they felt threatened by my Absolutely. Presence. Right. It's ridiculous. I'm like, you guys were threatened. They threatened me on Twitter. I'm going to beat your ass. I got your address, pictures of my kids' school, shit like that. I was getting threatened on Twitter by a mob.
Absolutely.
But I'm like, you're not going to really do anything. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure my son could take you. You know, like, there's no guns here, so I'm not worried. But I'm like, what are you going to do? Throw a bottle at me or something? Like, I will beat the fuck out of the first motherfucker that tries to get physical with me in Japan. And they know that. But I'm like, I ain't initiating it. I'm like, you're the ones making threats to my life and all that. But I'm laughing at it because I know you're just on Twitter being a big man. I know in real life you would never say or do anything, right? You'd piss yourself. they pissed themselves, and it looked really bad optically that I'm parading around with the Confederate flag in the middle of Black Lives Matter and nobody's doing anything. Like, well, why would you? If you talk to me, I'd say, hey, I'm with you on the police abuse shit, but I'm pissed off that you're toppling Confederate statues. What the fuck does a Civil War memorial to veterans have to do with George Floyd getting beat up by some Yankee cop in Minnesota? Nothing. Mm-hmm. Right? But they're just, fuck the left, man. Fuck Antifa. Fuck Black Lives Matter. Like, because Black Lives Matter, Black lives don't matter to Black Lives Matter. And they're not fighting fascism in Antifa at all. That's just a title. It's just a bunch of soy thug cry bullies that go around and destroy properties, steal from people, assault. And they've even murdered people. It's essentially a wing of the FBI. Fuck absolutely. The FBI.
And Antifa. At this point, they are draining money from the system and finding ways through nonprofit organizations. It's becoming a whole network of money, just like these federal agencies. Philosoraptor says, Ryan Dawson is awesome. I agree. Ryan, I didn't know what ham meant. Hard as a motherfucker. I imagine that when people were going ham, I imagine just a big ham that they held in their hand and they were tapping on people and going crazy.
Well, that would chase away all the Muslims and Jews, I guess, because they can't get ham on them. I don't know. But like, it's hard as a motherfucker. It's all capitals, H-A-M. And I was serious. I'm like, I'm fucking pissed about the Confederate statue stuff. That's why I hated Spencer so much, because they ruined the General Lee. I'm like, I'm glad I'm not in the U.S. because I'd be in jail, because I would not let anybody touch those things. That matters a lot to me. I've got stars and bars right here. And it's like, man, dude, not in my hood. You're not doing that. And I'm here. I'm like, you're not touching any statue for anybody, samurai or whatever. I don't care what they did. You know, you don't know the history. You don't know what you're doing. You're just destroying shit. They're really, Antifa is just hates the West. They hate America. They hate
the past. The whole society. They hate inheritance from fathers and history. And they want to do a tabula rasa.
Well, it's what the Unabomber wrote about with this raging inferiority complex. Anything that they perceive as superior, they hate. Mm-hmm. So they hate straight white males. I'm not saying they're superior. I'm saying they think like that. And so they don't like rationality. They don't like America. They don't like anything that's seen as strong, because they're pathetically weak. And they want to level everything and tear it down. That's why they gravitate to ideologies of communism and socialism and stuff, because it's a great equalizer. Yeah, we're all equal. None of us have anything to eat. Great. You know, we're all at the same level. It's just, they hate, like, the feminist, that's the word. I can't think of anything more useless than a feminist lesbian. But it's like, okay, most normal people don't think about it, but it's the ones who in the back of their head really think men are superior, that desperately have to prove otherwise all the time. A woman can do that. Like, why do you have to say that? Do I have to run around saying a left-handed person can do this and that? No, because we all know this. We're like, yes, left and right-handed people can do the same jobs. But you do see a lot of people run around like, a woman could be an engineer. I'm like, yeah, I guess some of them, you know, like if they're interested in it. But, you know, they will not admit biological differences in, well, I'm getting this whole thing, but like, the rage is coming from an sense of inferiority, where they see it's
Ted
true.
K had pointed, Papa Ted mm-hmm. K, right once again. Ryan, thank you so much for coming. It was awesome.
Awesome, man. Yeah, nobody cares if I say American Samoans own the banks. It's only if I say something. We'll be right back.